2011 has been a 1776 moment for a lot of the world. The year of declarations and manifestos and uprisings and battles to take a whole new set of Bunker Hills. As though within a document associated with the creation of the United States of America back in the 18th century, new voices cry out. We, the people of
Egypt,
Yemen,
Syria, Saudi Arabia, Algeria, Jordan.
Yes, we, the people calling from across the Middle East. From a disruptive message from some mostly British landowners to a king across the sea, we, the people, is a very large group today. Aside from America's own long growing up to learn and refine over the last 235 years who the Declaration of Independence refers to, the United States had to explicitly add all kinds of folks who were clearly people long before they got the rights of Americans. So it is in the so-called Arab Spring, where tens of millions are sending disruptive messages to their own kings and presidents. From the life and death struggles in the streets of Cairo, reported for us by Nick Kristoff at the New York Times.
Tahrir Square has been, you know, full of people, full of a real sense of hope that there is change coming, profound change coming to Egypt and throughout the Arab world. I think that people are losing their fear to some degree. I've been asking people, interviewing lots of people each day, and it strikes me that each day more people are willing to give me their full names, knowing that, that I may indeed publish them and that they might get in trouble.
From Cairo to the chaotic anarchy on the streets of Yemen.
Today we celebrate achieving the first phase of our revolution. This is not the end of the revolution. We will continue rallying and camp out until we are sure that we have started building our new Yemen.
And then there's the dark siege inside Syria, cut off from the light of the outside world.
The government will not offer concessions when it feels weak, when it's reeling from these scenes of thousands in the streets right now. The government might be more willing to talk if it feels like its position is stronger.
That's the New York Times' Anthony Shadid. And then there's the simple demand that women rich enough to own as many as two cars also be allowed to drive them on the streets of Saudi Arabia.
We're just demanding this very simple, basic right that you don't discriminate against us. If I own a car, then I have a right to drive it. It's not a threat to the government. It's not a threat to stability. It's not a threat to anything. Protests have that, they're linked with being a threat to the government. And we don't want that. That's not what we're aiming for. We just want to be able to drive our own cars.
And this is perhaps the spirit of the 4th of July worth pausing to reflect on at picnics and parties. A widening tent of freedom in the world. A cry heard in different forms, angry, hopeful, cynical sometimes, but always recognizable.
People are angry.
Safety and dignity.
We say to the regime to change course and to change course now.
And stop killing people. We need freedom.
Some kind of revolution or something like that. We have to move. We're not going to stand still.
We the people. In our century, perhaps, the promise of we the people can finally be fulfilled. The we to include more people than ever before, the we more regarded as us than some foreign them. All to bring about that imagined union, never perfect, but that more perfect union we celebrate every year on this day.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.